The youth was 17 years old. His face had the temporary good looks of the teenager, but an observant eye could detect the unappealing lineaments of the man-to-be. He was of average height, with light blonde hair and blue eyes. He was somewhat short-sighted. His neck was too thick, his body spotty and, apparently, malodorous. His legs were spindly and his stomach protruded. This was Nero, or to give him his full name and titles, Nero Claudius Caesar Augustus Germanicus. It was the autumn of AD 54, and he had just become Emperor of Rome. Surrounded by senior politicians, all wearing the dark togas of mourning, he was leading the funeral rites of his predecessor and adoptive father, Tiberius Claudius Caesar Augustus Germanicus, whom we know more succinctly as Claudius. The ceremony unfolded on the Campus Martius, the Field of Mars, a 500-acre grassland that stretched away north of Rome's city walls. It was a lung for the world's first megalopolis, which was home to an estimated 1 million inhabitants. The campus was a park, dotted with temples and other public buildings, and people of every class escaped there from the city's noise, crowds, and smells, and engaged in leisure pursuits. The wealthy raced around in chariots or exercised their horses, while those of lesser means amused themselves with playing ball games, trundling hoops, or wrestling. When necessary, there was plenty of space for military manoeuvres, as the field's name in honour of Mars, the god of war, indicates. Some of the ground was marshy, and there were frequent inundations. A central swamp was organised into a small lake. In the west, the river Tiber rolled along on its way to the sea, and to the east and southeast, hills closed off the scene. A commentator of the day observed that these distant features present to the eye the appearance of a painted backdrop. Indeed, the overall impression was of a very large stage set with a fine panorama from the vantage point of Rome's citadel, the capital. Today, the mood was melancholy and given over to state solemnities. A long procession wound its way through the city to the music of a funeral march. The late emperor had lain in state for 5 days, and now was conveyed on a flower-festooned bier made from ivory and decorated with golden fittings and purple cloth. The body lay in a concealed coffin, and a life-sized wax image of Claudius was visible above. Senators carried another gold statue of him, and a third represented him on a chariot. Behind the bier walked his relatives, led by Nero, their heads veiled. Women of the family expressed, or pretended, their uncontrollable grief by wailing at full throttle, ripping their clothes and tearing at their cheeks. In shocking contrast, a group of specially hired comedians clowned around. In a long-standing tradition of extracting farce from tragedy, one of them mercilessly caricatured the late emperor. Next in the cortege came, one might say, the resurrected dead. Down the generations, leading aristocratic clans commissioned realistic death masks, or imagines, made from wax, of their most distinguished members. These were worn at funerals by men who resembled the originals in body shape and size. They rode in chariots and were preceded by functionaries carrying the insignia of the public offices they had held in life. The long line of mourners paused in the forum, the city's main square, and Nero, as his heir and next of kin, delivered a eulogy. Claudius's ancestors sat in a row on ivory chairs and listened to the youthful emperor deliver a polished speech in praise of his adoptive father's achievements. An impressed Greek historian asked, who would not be inspired by the sight of these personalities from the past, all together and as if alive and breathing? Eulogy over, the cavalcade left the city and entered the green plain. It came to a halt beside an open-air crematorium, or ustrinum, reserved for the imperial family. Between a circular iron fence and a white marble inner wall, black poplars shaded an enclosure where Claudius's pyre, an assemblage of wooden logs arranged in the shape of an altar and papered with dark leaves, was waiting. The corpse and the couch were placed on the top of the pyre, and Nero put a torch to the whole elaborate ensemble. Perfumes were thrown on the flames, also cups of oil, trinkets, well-used clothes, dishes of food that the deceased had especially liked, and other items of sentimental value. When the pyre had burned down, the embers were soaked in wine. The bones were gathered up, placed in an urn, and carried to the place of burial. This was the vast mausoleum of Augustus, founder of the ruling dynasty. Erected about 75 years previously, near the river Tiber, it was a short walk from the Ustrinum. One of the largest tombs in the ancient world, the monument stood about 150 feet high and 300 feet in diameter. Above a high drum, built solidly of concentric rings of concrete faced with marble, rose an earthen mound covered with low-spreading evergreen junipers. On its apex stood a statue of Augustus that overlooked the city of which he was once the absolute ruler. A tunnel led from the entrance to an internal corridor that encircled a hall with wall niches that housed the burned detritus of the imperial dead in golden urns. In the centre of the mausoleum, a final chamber had been set aside for Augustus himself. Years had passed, and his descendants were numerous. There were few spaces left, but room was found for a new occupant. Nero watched as leading businessmen, barefoot and wearing unbelted tunics as tokens of grief, deposited what was left of Claudius in its niche. Nero's reign had well and truly begun.